I want you to think of London in the 1850s and the famous Blue Anchor Tavern, because there, in the center of the room, you would see Tiny the Wonder. Tiny the Terrier is a black and tan dog who killed hundreds of rats in an hour. That was the sport in England then. And I'm thinking of Tiny the Wonder, as Donald Trump becomes the president of the United States, the 47th president, because he's going to put Kash Patel into the job of FBI director. And Mr. Patel has expressed an interest in catching the deep state rats. The way they did it in those days, the dogs would bite them, shake their heads to break their backs, and throw them aside. That's why I've always told Amy Jacobson, the dog kills more rats than a cat. The cat will just sit there and play with it and eat it. The dog has killed it and moves on. We've got a lot to talk about today. Donald Trump becomes president, brings in Kash Patel, and the deportations start on Tuesday in Chicago. And to put this in much needed perspective, we've asked Mr. Perspective himself, Dan Proft of Chicago's Morning Answer on WIND Radio and host of his own podcast, Counterculture by American Greatness, to be with us. Jeff Carlin is here, as always, WGN producer, my friend, who years ago was the radio producer at WLS for Dan Proft's show and for me. And I'm John Cass, editor and proprietor of your favorite website, John Cass News, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. And where are you during the great restoration of Donald Trump as the deep state rats squeak in terror under the rotten floorboards of the Biden White House? You're here with Jeff Carlin, Dan Proft, and me on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN
So
Plus.
this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So, Dan Proft, as promised, welcome to the Chicago Way once again.
Good to be with you, John and Jeff, my old WLS colleagues. And, you know, when you're talking about that tavern in London and the rat killing sport, I'm thinking of my mind immediately went to the Green Dragon Tavern, which was a, if you recall, I'm sure you do, John Cass, being a man of letters, was a meeting place of the American Revolution in a significant way in Boston. Freemasons met there, Sons of Liberty. And thinking about Chicago specifically with ICE agents, their imminent arrival this week, so says Tom Homan, and the need for, I don't know, a meeting place in Chicago or Chicagoland to plot a revolution against this political class that has destroyed this once great state, something we've lamented for a long time. But for some reason, I think because of the quality of life issues that have been highlighted under the Trump era, during the Trump era, and also really buoyed his candidacy to a second term, it feels different in terms of the indomitable nature of the Pritzkers and the Brandon Johnsons of the world right now, doesn't it?
Yeah, I could almost hear them squeaking under the floorboards right now as we're speaking.
Exactly. Exactly.
What should we be concerned about, though? Because you've always warned us, and properly so, about too much sentimentality. and how sentimentality can be used to steer and herd people towards the chutes. So what should we be cautious of as Donald Trump, as we're excited, you know, we're happy Donald Trump comes in. He's not God. He's not Jesus. Although I did see a Truth Social picture of the president and Jesus at the gates of the White House. And that was rather upsetting and unnerving. So what should we keep in mind to keep our perspective?
Well, I mean, the enthusiasm is fine, and even silly meme enthusiasm is okay in these times. I mean, it's okay to have to be in a little bit of a celebratory mood as we inaugurate Trump again. But I mean, I just think you have to be very practical and very hard-headed about these fights before us. And I think people sort of fall into the trap of we won, and so what we wanted to see happen, what we were promised will happen, is just going to naturally occur. And it's not just with respect to appreciating that the left is just not laying down their arms. It's also appreciating that you still have many on the center right and many members of the House Republican Caucus, many members of the Senate Republican Caucus, that they mouth some of the words, but they are creatures of big government. They are tax eaters. They are big spenders. And you know, to cobble together the necessary coalitions around the various issues and to hold them together is no easy trick. And so, you know, I would just, I guess, caution people to stay just as engaged now that we're in the implementation phase as you were in the phase of defeating Biden and then Kamala.
I mean, that's one of the things that in Chicago, you know, Chicago and all, Brandon Johnson is their whole, that whole you know, chaos agency that they've installed. I mean, they thought they had this mandate to go out and do whatever the hell they want. They can't do anything anyway because they're completely feckless. But that's, it was like, oh yeah, but celebratory, and then nothing, you know. And you can't do that. If you've got to, you're gonna put up. You got to put up, right? I mean, that's what you're hoping to see. What do you think is primary for Trump in this? I mean, obviously the raids as they're being supposedly promised. I mean, that is it that his first thing? Or, I mean, he's, do you see a list of things?
Jeff, repatriations.
Where's that repatriations? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think you have to. I attended this talk that Scott Walker gave, former Wisconsin governor, the other night, and he was talking about conversations he had with Mitch Daniels when he was contemplating running for president in 2016, Walker. And Mitch Daniels, the former Indiana governor's advice to him was just understand, you know, when you take office, that's when your political capital is at its highest. And it starts to deteriorate with each day forward. So you better spend it. And and the way to spend it is to think about it from the perspective of the business person. I'm going to invest this capital to reap these rewards so that I can invest more capital to reap more rewards. And this is what Trump needs to do. And so I think there's the idea of investing the political capital he enjoys now. He's never been more popular. He's never had more support. He's never had more people hoping that he will be successful in accomplishing the things that he laid out during the campaign. And so it's time to invest that political capital in those directions concurrently. You know, you can run on more than one track at a time in parallel fashion. And I think that's what he needs to do on matters from border security to the Doge boys and talking about, you know, talking about a plan to restrain federal spending, re-upping the 2017 tax cuts, which expire. Which Steve Moore suggests is something that needs to get done by this summer. You know, I mean, I think, you know, what did he say? He said, my vengeance for what they did to me and what they did to so many of his supporters is going to be the American people's success. Well, so if that's going to be the case, then you need to improve people's public safety. You need to stop spending money we don't have. And you need to allow Americans to enjoy more of the fruits of their labor. And he needs to spend political capital in those directions straight away.
But there's always a but. Here's what I want personally. I want a reckoning.
Yeah.
Joe Biden, I don't want the Democrats to get away with just saying, playing the old trick of, well, he's a senile old man. And come on, John B. Come on, Dan and Jeff B. Be compassionate. Show some compassion. I'm not feeling compassionate. I'm feeling like a hunter. Like I want to go hunting right now. I want to go rat hunting. I want the rats to be shaken. Is that wrong of me, guys? Am I being like short-sighted here?
No, I don't think it's wrong. It's just as long as we don't do it the way that they did it. I mean, the whole confirmation hearings with Adam Schiff is, you know, imploring Pam Bondi, really, you know, please, you're not going to do to us what we did to you, are you? It was a wonderful moment. And the answer is no, we're not. But that doesn't mean that we're going to give anybody who is unworthy of a pass a pass. And so what I would say is Jim Comer referred James Biden for prosecution. Right. And I haven't seen, he's on the clock. Joe issue one of those peremptory pardons that we're worried about that would include his brother.
Hey there, Chicago Way fans, and those of you who just hate listen for internet trolling purposes. As you may or may not know, shortly after recording this, Joe Biden did, in fact, pardon his brother.
So if Jim Comer has enough evidence, in Pam Bondi's opinion, to pursue a federal investigation into James Biden and go over the facts lead, that's what should be done. If there is enough evidence to suggest that Liz Cheney tampered with a federal witness during those that Star Chamber J6 committee hearing, then
yes.
Then that's an investigation that should be pursued. I mean, if there's, as Mike Davis at Article 3 Project and others have argued, that if there's evidence of collusion between federal and state prosecutors like Colangelo from the Department of Justice and Alvin Bragg in New York, to deprive Trump of his federal civil rights, then there should be investigation pursued. And I think it's one of those things that Trump doesn't need to talk about, and he doesn't need to spend his political capital there because he's putting people in place, Bondi and Cash Patel, for example, that know what to do, and they don't need instruction on the topic. And we should have the expectation that they will act in furtherance of that reckoning that you're talking about, but the kind of reckoning that is consistent with equal justice before the law, not consistent with the lawfare the left practice.
This is not a banana republic, no matter how much they tried to turn us into one. And
right.
I would resist that. And I resist, as you say, all Americans should keep this in mind, that this is the time, you know, when you have the stick is the time to think about not using it. So restraint is what's necessary as well, right?
Well, yes. I mean, judiciousness, right? Restraint, yes. Where it's called for, and action where it's called for. I mean, I just go back because this has obviously been a topic that has been, fairly dominant since the election. Well, even before the election, this idea that there has to be a reckoning. Otherwise, the next time the left has their hands on the levers of power, this will happen again, and probably even to a greater extent. They'll be even less inhibited going after supporters. That's a legitimate concern. But I just say again, I mean, here's my position, and I hope I'm proven to be right. This is sort of a negative analogy, because I don't mean it in the same way, but I think people in Chicago will understand it. And what came to mind when we were talking about this one day on the show, John, was Sorich and Slattery, you know, two of Mayor Richie Daley's patronage guys who right. took the fall for him with the illegal hiring, the illegal hiring scandal du jour in City Hall. And there was all this talk at the time when those guys were on trial. This is just the feds are starting with Sorich and Slattery, and then they're going to climb the food chain and get to Richard Daley. They're, you know, just outside his inner circle right now. And Sorich and Slattery never talked. But the point was they never had anything to say. because it's not like they were taking orders from Daly. They weren't having communications with Daly because Daly didn't need to tell them anything. They knew what to do. They knew what they were hired to do. And
they grew up in the business. They knew. Right. Yes. Exactly.
Right. And so that's what now that, and I don't of course mean it in the same way. I mean it. Pam Bondi, you know, is the AG of Florida for a good spell. She's a former prosecutor. Cash Patel has been in both a federal public guardian as well as a federal prosecutor. And obviously he was in several posts during Trump's first administration. These people know what the landscape is. They know what to do consistent with the Constitution and their understanding of what needs to be done to restore a belief in the justice system in America. So that's what I'm banking on.
Do you think that and maybe this is what you're kind of referring to, is the Democrats, you know, overplaying their hand maybe, or just being overzealous for no apparent reason other than just to do it on? If there's no end game, if there's no one's going to jail, but let's, you know, bring this to trial or bring something out, is it worth it for that too? I mean, if that's the pound of flesh they get, that's the pound of flesh they get.
Well, what I would say is it's worth pursuing investigations and bringing the people, the American people along every step of the way. It's worth presenting information to the public that should have been made public, even if it doesn't rise to the level of criminality, but just sure. So you know who the bad actors were and what they were actually doing and did versus what they were saying publicly. I mean, I think that that's part of the reckoning too. It's not just putting people behind bars. It's full disclosure on who was doing what from COVID to, you know, all of
put it on the record, essentially, you know?
Yes.
Cause I mean, these wild times history is, you know, I say it was, you're never really going to decipher the moment unless you're like have perspective beyond the moment, you know, 10 years out, whatever, you know, some historians say it, you want it on the record to be like, hey, look at this. This is what was really going on. You know, now is our chance to pull back the curtain. I see that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if Fauci or Collins, just for example, did anything illegal.
Right.
But I know they did a lot of things that were wrong. And I know that they had a lot of help, tried to cover their tracks every step of the way. So whatever's left at, for example, FDA and NIH and HHS and CDC, all these alphabet soup public health agencies, I want to see it. And I'm counting on, you know, RFK and Makari and Bhattacharya to bring it forward for the interest of all those people who were harmed during COVID. Pete Hegseth talked about it at his confirmation hearing. All those men and women in the military who were bounced out of the military, they're going to be apologized to. They're going to have their rank and their pay restored. They were who were bounced for not taking the COVID shot. And so, that's part of the reckoning too.
Doesn't it though also kind of open up the government, or, you know, in a civil sense too? Because once we start seeing that there is maybe, you know, malfeasance, you know, that's going to be a whole can of worms. That's probably, we're not going to see the end result of these will be beyond Trump's term. I mean, if these things get going, much like the quote unquote investigations that Trump took very long to get going and, you know, see fruition. Pardon me. What do you, I mean, Dan, what do you think is he's got like 2 years, right? I mean, President Trump becomes, everyone's saying 2 years is like this, you know, forced pressurized time until things probably change and he loses some of his cachet. Where does he go next? I mean, who's he going to anoint to be the follow-up, because they're gonna have to turn to that in 2 years, right? It's gonna have to start campaigning, or at least pushing people in the right position.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, the 2 years, everybody's on that. They need to be, because then you have midterm elections, and the suggestion is it's a fait accompli, which I don't agree with. If he invests the capital and starts to reap rewards over the next 2 years for the American people, then there's nothing that says that the House, the Republicans can't retain the House in the midterms, that the Republicans can't retain the Senate in the midterms. So I don't concede the point, but I think you have to act like you're on a 2 year schedule, just for the purposes of the sense of urgency you need around the implementation. In terms of, you know, successors, I mean, it's really hard to say. I clearly if things go well, then J.D. Vance has been, is well positioned to be the heir apparent. that doesn't mean that he in 28 is going to have a pass in the primary, although it could. I mean, there's still a lot of other people out there, and there's still a lot that happens in 4 years, both at the state level as well as the federal level, that can reshuffle the deck. So, you know, all you can really say at this point is, yeah, J.D. Vance is well positioned if things go well. But there's a lot of other talent out there in governorships and in the Senate, too, that hasn't really even had a test yet at the sure. at the national level, the Tom Cottons and the Josh Hawleys of the world, that you could have a very competitive primary in 2028, I should say, or you could have J.D. Vance as the odds-on favorite and a real extension of this administration.
Sure, I mean, someone like a Vivek Ramaswamy, right? And, you know, as governor of Ohio, if he wins, I mean, that would be a guy who I've always thought is he's got everything you want in a he's very kind of Kennedy-esque and very smooth and very knows how to talk to people where they're coming from, but
Vivek. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's like I said, if Vivek went from Doge and Doge did some significant work and was able to win statewide office in Ohio, sure, of course, he's a national player. But I mean, I could take you down to Florida. If sure. Byron Donalds is running for governor to follow DeSantis in 2026. Byron Donalds is a national player, too. He's well regarded in Trump world. He's the governor of Florida, and he continues on the success that Rick Scott and Ron DeSantis have brought to Florida. Then Byron Donalds would certainly be a name in the mix, too. So, I mean, it's like I say, the good news is there's a lot of talent and upcoming talent in the GOP ranks, which is why it's so difficult to predict. And so we hope that everybody who is sort of party to this this counter revolution it finds success, and then we have a lot of good options.
And it's crazy. It's the first time in my lifetime that maybe I'm just ignorant, but there is this bench, you know, this farm system of strong, you know, right candidates. And the left is just, you know, in tatters. It's like a wasteland after the last.
Wait a second, Jeff. You know, please, somebody has to stand up for J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Fed.
Because he can't stand up for himself without breaking his leg. Oh,
that's so easy. That's too easy beneath you.
Layup.
No, it's not beneath me. Not beneath
me. Well, at least you're honest.
That's true. Yeah, Jelly Belly, I know he has, big appetites. I'm talking politically.
Right. Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. I don't really see it for him. As I've said before, probably on this show too, sometimes there's not enough money in the world to sell manure smelling air freshener. and that's what I think Jelly Belly's candidacy at the federal level is going to be. You know, and that frankly assumes that he cruises to reelection in 26 in Illinois, right. Which I know that's more likely than not. But you know, you never know. I mean, at some point, if, you know, all the people that are running around decrying Brandon Johnson, BLM Brandon, maybe they start to look around and say, you know, he's got a lot of help. And as I look at the state level and what's going on statewide, I see a lot of the same policies. I hear a lot of the same rhetoric. Maybe it's a little bit more polished. It's a little bit less apparatchiky than BLM Brandon's, but it's the same policies and it's the same rap at the state right. level that you're seeing at the city level. So things aren't going great in Illinois. And, you know, you never know. After 2.5 terms, maybe people start to get a little Pritzker fatigue. We'll see.
Well, part of that is wrapped up in our attitude towards media. Part of that, the disgust for Pritzker, is wrapped up in our attitude towards the Tribune and the Sun-Times, who have been largely combine cheerleaders forever. Mm-hmm. What is the future? I don't see a future for either place, but I wanted your perspective, because I noticed that they've insulted, like, this is a Catholic town, and the Chicago Tribune insulted Catholics the other day in a ridiculous, garbagey piece. And I'm thinking there is no future for the so-called media anymore. It's no more. There's no future. Yes or no?
Yeah, I think it's speaking to a dwindling audience of sort of, you know, the lobotomized left. I mean, that they're dyed-in-the-wool constituents. So yeah. I mean, it really is the proverbial singing to the choir in terms of the readership of the Tribune or the NPR Times, state-run media, and the network affiliate newscast too. I just think that I think that, you know, it's different than the way that I describe the difference is you never hear somebody say, did you see what Cass had, you know, like when you were at the Tribune, did you see what Cass had to say today? Nobody says that about the Tribune. Nobody says that about the Sun-Times, even in political circles, even with right. transactional hack journalists like Steve Neal at the Sun-Times. People would still like pay attention to what Steve Neal had to say because they knew he was talking to insiders and so on and so forth. And it was also a different era too, when things were not as people were not as fatalistic, because things were not as bad. At least the perception was different. But I mean, nobody says, "Did you see the thing in the Sun-Times? Did you see the think piece that this person wrote in the Tribune?" Nobody says it. It's just not particularly relevant. So I think its readership is largely those who are left, who just read it or subscribe to it because of, you know, 50 years of inertia, or because, you know, they're part of the city club luncheon crowd, and this is what they'll talk about when they go listen to some middle manager talk about the bright future Chicago has, or what they're doing at the Department of Transportation or some other bull jive. And so, yeah, I think the landscape, obviously the media landscape has changed significantly. I think it will continue to change. I think you have new outlets, Chicago Contrarian, the local newspapers that I've been a part of that have been so well received by the establishment Chicago media. I think you're going to, you know, see there are X accounts that have more followers and more daily interactions, right, and things that are local
interactions
than does the Chicago Tribune or the Chicago Sun-Times, right, or the network affiliate newscast. I think it's going to continue to go that way. I think, you know, it's like an aging golf club. You know, when the average age of your member is 75 years old, you better start getting with the actuaries and figuring out how you're going to keep the club open in 10 years. Right. That's sort of what I think about the media.
Right. I always think about how many people just can't figure out how they cancel their subscription, or just like what overall subscriptionism is that. Yeah. And they just like tend to that. Like, oh, your bill didn't make it, or couldn't, oh, we lost your call. Call the Tribune. It's like trying to call the 1920s.
There's only one subscription to have.
Terrible.
And everyone knows it. And you can get a no Trumbullone hat if you're a subscriber, or you can even not. Podcastnews.com is the only place to go with your money. And I demand it.
That's right. Yeah, you demand it. Wow. No, that's right. Well, the other thing that's just funny too is you see these emails they send out, like these subscription deals. It's like the old Columbia record deal. For 1 cent, you can get these 12 records, and then they hope to sign you up to pay.
Maybe, right.
Yeah, something like that.
Penny for 12 months, but then your first child has to be named Tribune.
Basically, what it is,
Greg Pratt.
It speaks to organizations that are not particularly financially healthy.
When the Tribune allowed Greg Pratt to write about people that he was soliciting money from, didn't that happen, or is that some sort of nightmare that I
no that happened
woke up in a nightmare?
No, he shared a fundraising for somebody.
Can you imagine if any conservative had done that? Or I mean, can I play the what about game? What if anyone else, like Dan Proft, had said that, or me, or Kristen McQuarrie, or somebody like that? They would have crucified us.
Oh, yeah. How dare
Yeah, but you know what? Just sorry to interrupt, Jeff. But you know what? To the point.
Yeah, go.
John, nobody knows who Greg Pratt is.
Right.
He's irrelevant. He's I don't even exactly know. Is he supposed to be like their top political reporter now or something? Nobody pays
attention. Yeah, City Hall.
Nobody knows who these people are.
Right, exactly.
I mean, you know, I'll give, even though I don't particularly care for her, I'll give Fran Spielman her due. I mean, she, in her day,
she did stories, yeah.
Yeah, she did stories. You pay attention, you read them, you may disagree, agree, you may know what she's doing, who she's protecting and who she isn't, but whatever, it was relevant. The whole thing, and this is like the, you know, David Mamet's great point about the left, what they most fear is the loss of relevance. What they most fear is exclusion. Well, what's happening to the Tribune and Sun-Times and these network affiliate newsreaders is that they're being excluded because they're irrelevant. Nobody cares. Nobody pays attention. Nobody knows who they are. And I know that, you know, comes as I know they don't think that because they can still keep up appearances with the brand and with the studios and with the makeup and they still make more than they should, even though they make a fraction of what they were making, you know, a decade ago. But I mean, they are just trending towards complete oblivion.
Well, speaking of things that are trending towards complete oblivion, CPS is in this, you know, downward spiral that's been going on my entire lifetime. And you know, I know you've talked about it. Did you see this, Dan? And I'd love to get your reaction to this. This Stacey Davis Gates calling out Pedro Martinez like a special needs student. And that must have infuriated you, right? I mean, you're a guy who's definitely, you know, who gets slap back. It's, you know, blow back from saying things because that's your live radio. I mean, that's kind of the joy of it, in my opinion, is to be out there and be live and local and in the moment. What was your first thought when you saw that story? For those who haven't seen it, Stacey Davis Gates went out in front of a big, you know, what was it, the annual delegates dinner and said that, hey, you know, these negotiations with CPS, CTU, which are just mind-blowing the way they're going, Pedro Martinez is so tough to work with because he's like a student who doesn't do anything. I can't suspend him. He should have an IEP, meaning he should be, you know, a special needs plan. And this is, you know, that's so tough being working with.
No, I mean, she, you know, just to fill it in, she later sort of apologized, walked back that statement in.
Right.
You know, I mean, Stacey Davis Gates is just another in a long line of obnoxious, ignorant, which is a terrible combination. Just those two qualities, being obnoxious and ignorant, being loud about it.
Ugh,
it's a terrible quality. Right. Union bosses at CTU. I mean, and you know, I mean, her whole imperious attitude is indicative of the ruling class mentality that was that took hold in Chicago long before anybody was talking about the ruling class at the national level. It's been this way for so long. It's hard to, I mean, you almost have, I don't know. I have to go like reread Gus Russo's book, The Outfit, to try to pinpoint when it started in Chicago. But, you know, what's the difference between Stacey Davis Gates and D. Sharon Grant? What's the difference between Pedro Martinez and Arne Duncan, or pick some other flunky that some other flunky mayor appointed to preside over this Politburo called the Chicago Public School System that over the last 50 years has at least has done nothing but prevent about 80 to 90% of the kids in the system from ever having the opportunity to earn a quality education, just creating second-class citizens generation after generation, because the vast majority of students come out of CPS completely unprepared for the work world or to go to post-secondary education. So what do you say about those people? I mean, like all of this act that she puts on, the city contract, the new contract is going to be $50 billion and 3 cents. And what are you going to do about it? I mean, all this, you know, cheap street theater. You know, she's a disgrace. But I mean, what am I supposed to get worked up on? I mean, all those posts, the CTU boss, the CPS City Hall toady, the mayor's office. I mean, when was exactly, when am I supposed to reference? When do we go back to a halcyon period where these posts were held by thoughtful people who were considered and respectful of the people financing all of this? I don't know when we had anybody who fits that description in any one of those jobs. So Stacey Davis Gates was just the latest. And the whole controversy about her rhetoric, you know, detracts away from the fact that CTU and CPS, unsurprisingly, have agreed reportedly on the economic terms of the contract. Now they're just arguing about things like the extent of the sanctuary city protections that are going to be afforded and the how is CPS going to be properly antagonistic towards federal law enforcement and so forth. They've agreed to economic terms that will see the Chicago Public Schools teachers, who are already the highest paid teachers in the country, government school teachers in the country on a cost of living basis, increase their salaries by 50% over the life of the contract, from a little over 90 grand to more than 140 grand. And that's before you include the benefits and before you include basically guaranteed seven-figure pensions now for all of CPS teachers who are in the system long enough to vest, who pay, well, it's supposed to be 9% of their salary towards their pension benefits. But of course, CPS has been picking up half of it for the past 35, almost 40 years. So it's really more like 4% for these guaranteed seven-figure pensions. I mean, you want to talk about Madoff-level Ponzi schemes. That is this whole system.
Right.
But instead, we talk about, Pedro Martinez is in a fight with Brandon Johnson. Those are phony fights. Those are all phony fights. Even if they disagree, he wants him out for a different communist. It doesn't matter. Those fights don't mean anything because they don't change whoever, quote unquote, wins. It doesn't change anything that's going on in the school system or in the city. Those are all the phony fights that they want us to pay attention to, so we don't pay attention to the underlying grand theft that goes on a daily basis. Theft of both money and of children's futures in CPS.
We will see in the next day or so. We're recording on Sunday, so by Tuesday, we will see a real fight where the media, Tribune and Sun-Times, gather with the Democrats to wail and keen like mourners at an Irish funeral for the Latinos and the illegal migrants who are being deported or repatriated.
I thought you were talking about Mike Madigan's forthcoming conviction.
No, I was one of those who thought Madigan went down that it would be good for the state. Now I'm not so sure.
It doesn't matter.
Someone once said, Illinois isn't broken, it's fixed. Right, Dan?
Oh, yeah. Who's that?
Great man said that.
Dan, thanks for joining us. It's always good to talk to you.
We can't let him go.
Well, I wasn't going to let him go. I just wanted to thank him before we do. But I wanted to ask you, at the very least, and John, if you got something political, feel free to jump in. But I want food because we're putting together a cookbook of sorts. And so Dan Prof's like weekend, he doesn't have to do anything. He's like cooking, got cigars at his house. He's hanging out with a good glass of wine. What's Dan Prof make? Like, what's your go-to? You're going to impress somebody or you're just relaxing?
Nothing.
Dan Prof makes a phone call to somebody who prepares the food.
Nothing. You can't boil water? Nothing?
I don't know. I don't do any.
All right.
Yeah, I don't.
Who do you call? Like, what's the restaurant? Where do you go? Where do you take them? What's the meal?
In Chicago?
Yeah, sure.
I would, if you're like adding dishes to a book of what you should try at home, yeah. If you're a chef like Cass or where you should go, I would say the Duck L'Orange at Le Nomade.
Good, very fancy.
Yeah, very fancy. I would also say you got the pizza at Oven Grinder, Chicago's Pizza Factory Oven Grinder. Got to get You got to get the pizza pie at Oven Grinder.
Is it thick? Or because I won't do thick. I won't do that thick thing.
It's not deep dish in the traditional sense, John. You have to broaden your mind on the topic.
I'm a conservative when it comes to pizza.
Is it more like Detroit style?
No. It's an upside down. It's baked upside down, and they flip it, and it's like a pizza pie. It's like a
right.
But it's magnificent, and you get the you get the chef salad that you split with it. I would say.
Sure.
If you don't normally dine alone like I do, if you have a friend, then you can split it.
Table for one,
just like the lonely guy.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. Excellent.
Well, Dave, thanks for being here with us. And we'll have more to talk about in days to come, because this thing is not going away. For Dan Proft of WIND's The Morning Answer. You see him here every morning, 5 to 9, with Amy Jacobson. And on his own podcast, Counterculture. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, my friend. And a man who wants to bake more pies, even though he never brings one to me. And for John Cass, executive in chief, grand poobah, and proprietor of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern Common Sense trademark. Thanks for joining us again on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.